Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Are you bothered by persistent pain at one or more points in your body that simply won't go away? Well, if so, you're not alone. According to a recent National Health Interview survey, persistent aches and pains plague nearly one-fifth of all adults in the U.S., and I'm certain that percentage is significantly higher for those of us over 40. An equally important question is, how are you dealing with the pain? Have you visited your doctor or consulted with a medical professional? Are you taking medication to combat the pain? Have you made the decision to ignore or live with the pain? It won't go away, but it isn't all that bad, and anyway, you're tough. Well, guess what? My next guest, Dr. Yaling Liu, warns us not to try to ignore or power through persistent pain, and she contends that by doing that, you're actually teaching your brain to get good at being in pain, and this is how chronic pain sets in, and no one wants that. And as a much-preferred alternative, Dr. Liu is here to teach us how to target situations that cause the pain, thereby helping us to take back control and make pain go away. And Dr. Liu is a well-qualified expert on pain management, and she is a chiropractic physician with more than 20 years of clinical experience. She grew up with exposure to generations of Eastern as well as Western attitudes toward health and pain management, and she's taught anatomy, physiology, kinesiology, and later naturopathic physical medicine as an adjunct faculty member at Bastyr University in Seattle, and she's author of the acclaimed brand new book, Every Body's Guide to Everyday Pain. Hello, Dr. Liu, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hello, Roy. Thank you so much for having me on. It's a treat for me.
Well, about twice a year, for no apparent reason, I wake up with a grinding ache or a stabbing back pain, and I've been to my primary, well, this is an example. I personally experience some back pain, but let's say that I've been to my primary physician who tells me that tests show there's nothing wrong with me, and what are the big questions I need help to answer?
Well, that is the primary thing to make sure of. Initially, it sounds like you went the right route and got those tests and got the okay, which can be a little bit disconcerting. A lot of us would rather know that there's something going on instead of the nebulous, you're okay, you just have pain situation.
Just live with it.
Exactly, yeah. My main contention is that because of the wide variety of ages and body types that I've seen, I've definitely come to see that pain does not have to be associated with age. Age is a factor in pain, but it's about our tissue age rather than our chronological age. And I think many of us are just too quick to accept that, I'm over 40, so I must just have to accept this.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know the three questions you raised in your book is, why does it hurt, how do I make it stop, and how do I keep it from happening again? I think those are three logical questions you should ask. And let's begin with the first question, why does it hurt? Is there one overriding reason why we suffer pain?
Well, the bottom line does end up being that pain is the result of inflammation in the body that has gotten out of control. Now, we can have inflammation at a low simmering grade level for many months, weeks, years without noticing a thing. But when that inflammation becomes intolerable for our tissues, then we start to develop pain. And sometimes the thing that pushes us over the edge and results in pain is a teeny tiny little drop of water in the bucket.
That's interesting. I know you mentioned some clients that, like this carpenter that works bending over and doing things like that all along, and then wasn't he playing with his kids or something when all of a sudden the pain and intolerable pain came up.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, so many of my patients come to me with the perplexed situation where they were doing something perfectly normal, routine, something that they're familiar with that seems perfectly safe, reaching for a toothbrush, you know, stooping down to deal with their children, and then suddenly it feels like they've done something terrible to their body.
I'll tell you, if you reach for a toothbrush and have pain, that's quite a shock, I would think.
Yes, and it's not that uncommon, unfortunately.
Well, in your book, you tell us there are three major types of stress that trigger inflammation and the resultant pain. What are these three stresses, these types of stresses?
Well, the most sneaky kinds, really, are mechanical stresses. Just the stress of being upright against gravity all day long, it introduces the primary stressor that we're not so aware of, and that's compression. We become aware of that as when we have pain, we suddenly notice, wow, being upright is really stressful. But we're dealing with that stress all day long without any trouble most of the time. So if we can come to appreciate that things like being upright is actually stressful, we can...
Maybe we should go back to using all fours like the other animals.
Well, there you go. That's the answer. Yeah, so mechanical stress is like... being upright, sitting is one of the most compressive activities we do, which is why it's such a troublemaker.
Yeah.
Twisting and stretching, so elongating things in the body can also be stressful, even though they feel good sometimes.
Yeah,
so those are the mechanical stressors. Then there's the chemistry. Our biochemistry is also something that needs to operate in harmony and in balance, and when we throw our biochemistry off balance, that can cause inflammatory spikes. Sometimes our inflammation is all about what our body chemistry is doing, and people who are having trouble getting over a strain or a sprain, a mechanical issue, may actually have to look at their body chemistry to speed up the process of healing.
Well, that's interesting. We'll get into a little more of that later, but what's the third type of stress that...
The third type of stress, it overlaps a little bit with the chemistry, and that is our emotional state. I see a lot of patients come to me during times in their lives when they're going through really big transitions, divorce, death, moves, big relocation, change in job. These really profound changes in our lives can introduce stress, grief, sadness, all these kinds of emotions that really take a toll on how we hold our bodies, how we process our food, so our body chemistry and our mechanics are really very intertwined with how we feel emotionally.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But let's talk about each of these three triggers of pain, and we'll start with the mechanical triggers. And certain mechanical triggers are easy to identify, like if I sprain my ankle and it starts swelling and hurting, but others are not so obvious. What are some examples of, I think you touched on them briefly before, but what are some activities that can trigger inflammation and pain? You mentioned compression and lengthening, and what's shearing is the third one you mentioned in your book.
Shearing is it's a little take on twisting. So when we twist our bodies, the twisting isn't alone the troublemaker. It's the fact that we're twisting in the environment of gravity. So we're being compressed from the top down, and then we're moving body parts away from each other. So it's like tightening the cap on a bottle. We're shearing that cap down. We're screwing it down tight. And so that creates a sort of compressive stretch that can lead to trouble in the spine for sure.
And sometimes, as you point out in the book, the pain from mechanical stress sometimes manifests itself days or even years later.
Yes. And that's actually, it's a testament to our adaptability. We are amazing machines. Our bodies are well designed to adapt to adversity. And unfortunately, that leaves us with confusion when we finally reach our limit of adaptation.
Oh, I see.
So when we, you know, that's the last straw that breaks that camel's back.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to the chemical triggers. In your book, you advise that suboptimal food, air, and water, even emotional strain, produce too much acid in our tissues, and that this can cause pain. How does this work, and what can we do to combat these chemical triggers?
It's a very how do we keep this short? It's one of the most mysterious pieces to the puzzle because again, we can eat things and breathe allergens in our environment, and we can not breathe completely or fully and drink water that's contaminated without noticing a thing until we are piling on too many stressors to our system. The way that it works is that acidity in the tissues has been shown to cause inflammation, which causes pain.
Yeah.
It also can get our pain endings, our nerve endings, excited, and so we become a little more reactive to irritants.
I see.
And the confusing part is, what is it that causes acidity in the body? Sometimes we can eat acidic things, like lime juice is acidic on its own, but how we process it in the body actually creates alkalinity.
So it's
really quite a chemistry class in itself.
Yeah. Well, we don't need to get into all that detail, but presume our typical modern American diet is not the greatest for preventing or combating pain. How should we modify our diet, and what foods or liquids should we avoid? I know there's no great generalization on that, but give us a little guidance on foods that help cause pain.
Yeah, so the ones that are widely known to add to the acidic inflammatory situation are things like refined sugars, white flour. Those are really tough. The sugars are the biggest. And the sugars come in the form of, for some people, fruit sugar is even a little bit too much. So we have to be careful how much fruit juice we drink.
Yeah,
alcohol
I know. My
is
wife
very high.
Always looks for the fruit content in any juice that she buys because you think
you're
helping
fruit
your health
good.
And you may not be.
Exactly. Yeah, so the sugars for sure, the alcohol is a form of sugar, and the alcohol itself can tax the liver, which makes it harder to process those things.
Actually, I think you point out that drinking too much coffee for some may produce stomach pain, or maybe pain elsewhere, I don't know.
Yes, it's true. So and this is very highly dependent on your own constitution, your own tolerances based on your genetics. Coffee is acidifying.
Huh. Well, what are three primary methods that we escort waste byproducts out of our system once they enter in, and what do we do to encourage the elimination of those extra acid or that bad chemicals that are causing us pain?
Yeah, the stressful molecules that can accumulate, toxins, if you will, can be eliminated through the very basic bodily functions. Urine, stool, and sweat are the main ways that we naturally get rid of our garbage.
Yeah, that's good. But so I guess to make sure you're urinating enough, you want to drink a lot of liquids.
Exactly. Stay hydrated. You want to try to help make sure you have a bowel movement at least once a day. But that's why I think that's so important, because it really does affect your toxicity level in the tissues, the acidity level in the tissues, and that can influence how well you can get over pain, how well you can ward off pain of the everyday variety.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to understand how mechanical stresses and even this chemical imbalance can cause pain, but emotional triggers are not so easy to grasp. But in your book, you state that the phrase and attitude, "it's all in your head," is completely outdated. What do you mean by this, and how do our emotions cause pain? I think you may have touched on it earlier, but...
Yes. So how we feel is highly intertwined with the chemicals that also govern the processing of inflammatory fluids in the body. So when we have inflammation, some of the chemicals that are involved in that process in causing inflammation also can moonlight as mood-regulating chemicals in the brain. And so there can be a really close connection with how we feel emotionally to how inflamed our body is based on how we process those kinds of chemicals.
Kind of like the chicken and the egg.
Very much so. Very much.
They're feeding each other there.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you also somewhere in the book point out that lack of sleep can increase pain and screw up the chemistry in your body, and yet if you have enough pain, it may be keeping you awake. So
it's a vicious cycle for sure.
Yeah. Well, we briefly covered the causes of pain. Let's turn to ways that we can stop pain. To address the mechanical triggers, you suggest we react like we were supposed to when we were kids. If they told us if we were suddenly on fire, we were supposed to stop, drop, and roll. What do you mean by this stop, rock, drop, and roll to combat pain?
Well, inflammation, the process of inflammation, is very much like a fire in our tissues.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
It behaves the same way. And so if we listen to it right away, like we would when there's a fire alarm going off, we would want to stop right away, stop feeding the flames. And that, for us, translates into literally lying down. Just take the compressive force of gravity out of the situation, and you might find that it really gives a lot of relief.
I see.
And every little bit of relief that you can find by things that you do can be very empowering, and it can de-escalate the stress behind being in pain. Because, you know, speaking of emotions, if we're stressed about what's causing our pain, we don't know, there's worry and fear, that's going to feed into the pain as well.
Yeah, that's true. And then so that's the stop and the drop. What's the roll?
Well, the roll is a little take on what happens when we're lying down. It's something I struggle with patients after I finish releasing their pain and restoring function. They're lying down on my treatment table, and then everybody's impulse is to want to sit up like they're doing an abdominal exercise. And that can actually be extremely disruptive and can cause more strain. So what I ask folks to do is to pretend they're in their 90s. You know, we're all training to be in our 90s. So what we want to do is roll to your side, be really nice to yourself, use your arms to push yourself up. Don't ask your abdominal muscles to do all the work, because we're really not well-equipped to do that repeatedly.
Yeah, I can see how, you know, you might be have some relief from the pain, and then when you go to stand up and bend your back or whatever, you may be causing it to come back again.
Exactly.
So that makes a lot of sense to me. But
Anybody who's had bad back pain knows that you just can't sit up. And really none of us should be doing that. From lying flat on your back to sitting straight up is extremely stressful on the spine.
Well, you know, a lot of us, when we were kids, we were always told to sit up straight, don't slouch, and but in your book, you tell us that to sit in a curvy, neutral shape. Please explain why, and are there many chairs in the market that are designed for this? Or, you know, it seems like so many straight back chairs are very uncomfortable.
It's true, yes. And there is this widely held perception that the spine should be straight like a ruler. And unfortunately, that is the beginning of a lot of trouble. The muscles don't like that. We're designed to be shaped like an S. So the belly comes forward, the butt sticks out, the head
Don't tell the people in the Army or the Marines that.
I know, right? That's tough stuff. But we do run into a lot of trouble with this. When we force ourselves to stick the chest out and push the shoulders back, we're actually introducing stress into the spine, mechanical stress, because we're forcing it into a position that it's not really well designed for.
Well,
so there's a lot of re-educating that has to happen, and often it needs to happen with some outside input, because what we feel from the inside as being good posture isn't always the best posture for us.
Yeah, I notice when I sit in like a dining room chair for a long time, my back really doesn't feel very good. But I do have office chairs that I notice do have a little bend, like an S shape in the back, and they're much more comfortable. So
yes, you've got the right idea. So having a little lumbar support is nice, and making sure that you can rest your head back. And those are all really good aspects to comfortable, natural seating.
Well, here's an interesting one. If we experience pain in the neck or in the back, sometimes people tell us to stretch. I know I try to stretch the pain away by exercising the back muscles or twisting the neck. Is this a good idea, or does that only add to the problem?
It definitely can add to the problem. It's the most surprising piece of information that I have to share with everybody who comes through my door.
Yeah.
It's the stretching of the neck feels great because the sensation of stretch outperforms the sensation of pain. So our brain takes in the sensation of stretch much more quickly than the sensation of pain. So we can overpower it. We can block out the pain sensation, and it feels great. But what's happening when we stretch is that we're telling the brain, yes, in fact, there is a reason that that muscle was tight because, look, now it's being lengthened again. Oh. And the body's always just trying to stabilize and neutralize the spine. So as when we move away from neutral, the impulse is to tighten up so that that doesn't happen again.
So that, in long term, I guess that only adds to the pain rather than lessening it.
It can. It definitely can. Huh. If things are really out of balance, then that sort of stretching can make a really big difference. And it's the confusing type of, it's an unexpected, confusing sort of situation because it does feel good initially.
Yeah, that is. When we feel pain, another common response is to apply ice or heat. What do these elements, each of these, accomplish, and do both make sense, or and in which order should they be applied?
They definitely both make sense, and there are conflicting camps of thought about whether it's ice or heat that we need. I say we need both, usually.
I see.
It's not as easy to do both, but initially, when you're having a pain that's either hasn't been around for a while or it's just new for you, ice is the best first line of defense. But the key is to not keep it on for too long. You want to apply it for 10 minutes, take it off.
Hmm.
And the heat will help to loosen tight muscles. So you can put that on areas that are tight, maybe the areas opposite the area of pain. But usually you don't want to put heat on something that's freshly injured.
Oh, okay. So you put the heat elsewhere then, and surrounding tissues.
Exactly. Huh. And you can also apply the alternating ice, hot, cold, hot, cold, if you are more comforted by heat, but doing just heat is sometimes inflammatory itself, so you have to just be careful with that.
Yeah, that's what about common over-the-counter pain medications like aspirin, Tylenol, or Aleve? Do you recommend those to alleviate pain, or what about those medications?
Well, a lot of my patients do rely on over-the-counter pain medication occasionally. It's outside of my scope to be recommending any kind of pharmaceuticals, even if it's over-the-counter, but I do.
Nice.
I see people use them. The literature is clear on the fact that there are side effects to organ systems, so we have to be careful how we use them, in my opinion.
And in fact, they're masking the pain, but they aren't really addressing the symptoms, I wouldn't think. So I wouldn't think they'd be a long-term solution to anything.
Exactly, right. You can cover up the check engine light on your dashboard and proceed on, but eventually that engine's going to break down.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Well, to conclude, let's talk about fireproofing our bodies so that pain doesn't return, assuming that we lick it and get rid of it for now. Once inflammation subsides and we're pain-free, what's the best strategy to help us completely avoid recurrences of everyday pain?
So once we've moved through the episode of pain, it's very important to remember that the information we gained from what was causing our pain is information we have to continue to respect. So being kind to our body mechanics, paying attention to that compression, the stretching, the lengthening, and the twisting. Also, making sure to carry forward with being careful about our body chemistry, eating things that help us stay more alkaline, less acidic.
Yeah.
Making sure we eliminate, you know, the bathroom habits and moving daily so that we can work up a little steam or a little sweat to get those other toxins out of our body.
Well, in your book, you provide an extensive visual, really great visual guide to fireproofing, fireproof body mechanics. We don't have time for a lot of them, but let's talk about a couple. What's the wrong way and the right way for lifting a heavy suitcase out of our car's trunk?
Oh, boy, yeah. Well, anything that requires a reach, if it's light or heavy, it's going to, you really want to try to brace your legs against something before you lift. So in the pictures, you'll see that there's the thighs are leaning towards the car, and it's not often what we want to do. We want to stay clean, but you may have to risk getting dirty in order to save your back. So you lean with your thighs against the counter or against the car before you reach and lift. And then it's about trying to do things close to your center. So keep things close to your core. Don't reach from far away and then expect to have the strength to lift it far away.
Don't you try to bend your knees rather than just leaning over and lifting totally with a crooked back. Isn't that a better way to do it?
Right. The main points is to bend, support your legs, bend, and stick your butt out.
I see.
Yeah.
How about eating a bowl of ice cream in front of TV?
Well, I do encourage enjoying an occasional bowl of ice cream. But yes, we want to make sure to keep most of our body parts close to center. You know, if you're trying to lift the spoon to your head and you notice there's some strain in your neck, you're probably doing it too far away from your core, from your belly button. You want to keep everything close and compact. Especially if you're in pain. If you're not in pain, it's harder to remember. But when you have pain, you can experiment with these things, and you'll see that keeping everything close to center, moving like a robot, if you will, is actually, it feels a lot better.
I noticed in the picture you show, instead of leaning way over to a low-down like coffee table to dish out the ice cream, the subject picks up the dish and holds it and eats it closer to her face. I think that's probably a pretty sensible thing to do, as long as you're not spilling all over the floor.
Right. It may not be how you'd eat with the queen, but it certainly is better for you.
How about putting on a pair of pants? That's something, as we get older, it gets harder and harder to do.
It sure does, yeah. I can see why maybe they introduced kilts in the in certain parts of the world. But, you know, so if you are in a lot of pain, it can be very helpful to stay on your back, have the pants close by, and then what you're doing is slipping one leg on at a time while you're lying down.
I see. Yeah, that's fun. Or I think in the picture you show someone sitting on a stool while they're doing it, too.
Yeah, so those are the progressions. If you're feeling okay enough, if it's not quite that bad, sitting down and putting one leg in the one pant leg in at a time, that can work as well. It's better than standing teetering on one leg and hoping that you can hold your other leg up long enough to put it in the pant leg. That's it's a lot of work.
You have to get a lesson from the neighborhood stork.
Exactly.
Well, we discussed earlier how perpetual stress can be contributing to our pain. What are the best ways to reduce stress in our lives? I think they're pretty straightforward, right?
Well, they can be. It's easier said than done, of course. Lots of different things depend on how well we can let go of our stress.
Yeah.
Easy things are just getting out and moving your body, and you can change your stress level right there just with movement and breathing. There's also just the simple fact of letting things go emotionally, being able to distance yourself, know that.
Yeah, I like how you say shift your outlook on life. I know it's easier said than done.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, I think that's an ongoing goal many of us might have, to really get perspective on how bad you really have it. You know, is your stress worth your energy? And how is it affecting your body?
Let's talk about your brand new book, Everybody's Guide to Everyday Pain. I know you separate the every and the body, which is interesting. How is the book organized? I guess it's you have three sections. Why does it hurt? How do I make it stop? And how do I keep from happening again? I like that. But
thanks for catching that bit about the separation of every and body. That's definitely a fun little play on words. Yeah, so each section is dedicated to different aspects of what people have been asking me for years. When patients come in, those are the three questions they need answers to. And because I never feel like I have enough time with people in the office, the book is a wonderful way to supplement that. And hopefully a lot of people will enjoy the visuals. As you mentioned, there's a lot
I love both the pictures you had with visuals of ways to do it and ways not to do it, but also those comic-like illustrations are great where they show the little people in your body.
Sandy Johnson is the illustrator. She did a wonderful job of interpreting my imagination, basically. She's the responsible party for that beautiful work.
I like the neighboring tissues that were sitting back enjoying looking in on a window of all this stress and the part that was inflamed, but then it shows how they can suddenly be blown out as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's such an important point.
Well, where should we go to preview and purchase your book? Where's the best place to get it?
Well, it is available on Amazon now in paperback and in Kindle format.
Oh,
and that's so you can look for Everybody's Guide to Everyday Pain on the Amazon site. And my website also provides a link, which is stopeverydaypain.com.
Okay, stopeverydaypain.com.
That's it.
And I guess this is the first in a series of three books you plan.
That's right.
There's
much more to the story.
So when can we expect to see the next one? Although I guess we should concentrate on the first one while it's here. But
yeah, you know, all the feedback I'm getting is still it's going to continue going towards shaping the rest of the project. But hopefully by 2017 we'll have at least the second volume out.
I see. Well, in conclusion, following our conversations with Dr. Liu, I'm fairly certain you'll agree everyday pain is not something you or I should think we have to live with, nor should it be ignored. So please don't try to tough it out and live with the pain. It can seriously hinder your quality of life, and if pain keeps you awake at night, it can be a vicious cycle. Sleep deprivation can increase inflammation and pain. And, of course, your first mission is to consult with a medical professional and get the tests necessary, as Dr. Liu points out, to ensure the pain is not a symptom of a serious underlying health concern. But if it's not, then you have to ask yourself, how does pain and physical hindrance make me feel? Does it make me feel happy or angry, I should say? Obviously, it doesn't make you feel happy. Does it make me feel angry? Do I fear its onset? Do I stew over it? And does it prevent you from activities you love, like swinging your golf club or playing with your kids or grandkids? And whether you realize it or not, all these negative emotions can profoundly negatively impact your joy of living, your recovery from disease or injury, and your overall physical and mental health. And Dr. Liu's essential message is, one, you can understand the causes of pain and why it hurts, and you can explore effective ways to make the pain stop, and you can fireproof your body, movements, and lifestyle to keep pain from happening again. And if you suffer from everyday pain, even occasionally, I highly recommend Dr. Yaling Liu's book, Everybody's Guide to Everyday Pain. And thanks a million, Dr. Liu, for your most helpful counsel.
Oh, thank you so much, Roy. It's been my pleasure.
And best of success in the sale of your book and getting that message out so we can all be pain-free and joyful in the second half of life. Thank you so much, Roy, for joining us. Before I go, let me take a few moments to remind you of our OPENS formula for midlife revitalization. That's the OPENS formula, O-P-E-N-S, where each letter stands for an ingredient. And let's talk about each. The O in OPENS stands for an optimistic outlook. This means that you first need to focus on where you want to go in life. Nobody gets to the destination without a roadmap. You have to firmly, of course, first have in mind where you want to go. And then in your mind, imagine how wonderful life will be once you accomplish your objectives. And we're talking about visualization and beginning to live in your mind the wonderful person you seek to become. Picture in your mind the self-confident CEO of your own life. Never mind that you don't have all the answers of how you're going to get from here to where you want to go in your bright future. If you remain optimistic with a can-do attitude, solutions will come to you. And believe me, that's true. The P in the OPENS formula stands for prayer. And no matter how bright or experienced we are, none of us has all of the answers within. And I use the word prayer in its broadest meaning to include a spiritual connection with a power greater than ourselves. It doesn't matter whether you're a Christian, Muslim, or a Jew, or maybe you don't practice a specific religion. Reach out to a higher power, call it God or universal intelligence, whatever fits for you. and ask for guidance to praise and give praise and thanksgiving, recognizing that we can't do it alone, and to connect with the energy of the universe. Bottom line, to reawaken your positive energy and transform your lives, you will need to plug in to God. Try prayer and meditation. It works for millions. The E in the Opens formula stands for exercise, and you and I both know that moving our body and staying slim and healthy helps keep the mind sharp and optimistic, and it's difficult, if not impossible, to feel really good about life in a 50-pound overweight body, is it? And the exercise needn't be strenuous and should be in the form of something you like to do, not an odious task. Keep yourself, you don't have to knock yourself out. So take a walk, perform yoga, ride your bike, go for a swim, whatever you like to do. And notice how your mind frees up and fires up after you exercise. You'll begin to feel a lot better about yourself once exercise becomes a regular part of your daily regimen. The N is, and it works in close harmony with the E, exercise, because the N stands for nutrition. On a future program, our guest is going to talk in detail about mindful eating as opposed to what so many of us do, emotional eating. And in these modern times of busyness and stress, there's unhealthy food all around us, and it's always crying out, eat me, eat me. But before you attack that next high in calorie, low in nutrition meal, or that between meal snack, ask yourself, why am I eating? What am I eating? When am I eating? And how will I eat? And believe it or not, eating habits do make a difference. If you take your time and digest your food, it works a lot better than wolfing it down. You know, everyone's ideal diet is unique, but all of us need to be vigilant on what we're ingesting into our bodies. Instead of depriving ourselves, we need to experiment to learn how dietary modifications make us feel better, how they can and what modifications do. And when healthy foods make us feel better, we'll choose to give up the unhealthy foods, not because we have to, but because we want to, not deprivation, but out of joy. And the S in the Opens formula can stand for several different ingredients that are essential to renewal. One such ingredient is sleep, and certainly a consistent good night's sleep is essential to positive living. A second S is socialization. Obviously, no one can sustain joy and contentment in a vacuum. We all need to share our positive feelings and have a good time with others around. But to me, the most important S ingredient is service. So that's what we're going to talk about as the S in the Opens formula. None of us was created or placed on this earth to concentrate only on ourselves, on our own needs, and on our own well-being. And no matter how great midlife renewal makes you feel today, you'll not sustain renewal unless you dedicate at least a portion of your time and energy to serving the needs of others. And that doesn't mean you have to give up your own well-being for someone else, but we all need to bring someone else along. From experience, I can assure you that you will want to serve, and it will make you feel better and fulfilled. It's a true win-win situation because service is in your DNA. And as you spring to life in this wonderful season of rebirth, keep our Opens formula in mind: optimism, prayer, exercise, nutrition, and service to others. And we'll touch on all five of these aspects of renewal in upcoming programs, and trust me, it will carry you a long ways toward a joyful and productive life with you in control, but with your goal on service to others as well as to yourself. And that's our program for today. For a lot more, visit our website, middleagerenewal.com, and preview my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up. It's all about renewal in your middle years. And if you don't believe it now, you will soon join the congregation of believers and will discover that middle age can be your best age. Goodbye for now.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.